little section about appreciating Srila Prabhupada, particularly from the youth perspective, it's kind of universal, really. And then tomorrow, based on what we discussed today and tomorrow we're going to have a quiz, and there will be very amazing prizes for the quiz. Would you believe? How many free tickets to India are we giving away? Oh no. Some books. Back to Godhead. Oh. 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 Thank you. I don't deserve it. You're very kind. Hare Krishna. So yeah, that's the idea. Based on what we discussed today and tomorrow. We'll have a quiz tomorrow. Same time. Is it same time tomorrow? Anyway, we'll check that. But it's approximately the same time. Tomorrow at least. And then we'll have the quiz. And based on what we discussed now, you know, if you get the questions right.
1 o'clock to half past
1. 1 till half past 1. Oh, half an hour.
Half an hour for the quiz, 1 hour for the half past 2.
From 1 till half past 2.
Yeah, 1 o'clock for the discussion, half
an
hour for the class.
Okay, so yeah, starting 1 o'clock tomorrow. So anyway, you know, appreciating Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada is very appreciatable from any point of view, because he's really an amazing person. The way that Srila Prabhupada transcended material, just himself, how he transcended material considerations, because I remember actually, I first saw Srila Prabhupada April 14th or 15th, 16th, like that, right in the middle of April, 1972. So that's more than 40 years ago. Where were you 40 years ago? Forget. Previous lifetime. So I saw Srila Prabhupada middle of April, say, 1972. I was a student at university in Auckland, New Zealand. But I was not your ordinary student. I was a very lazy, lackadaisical, don't care student. Really, I tell you. Amazing. And I was studying philosophy, it was my only subject. And I wasn't studying it to get a degree. I was studying it just because I wanted to understand me and life. That's exactly why I was there. I was not really interested, not to speak of enthusiastic, to get a degree. I just wanted to understand. And Srila Prabhupada came to the university. I've told that story so many times, I'm sure you've all heard it probably 10 times at least. You can probably repeat the whole story to me. But I saw Srila Prabhupada there, and I was not exactly a hippie, but I was sort of a relative of a hippie, someone connected with a hippie. Fortunately, there are no photographs left of me in those days that I'm aware of. It would be embarrassing if there were. But I have very long hair and a beard. And yeah, that was a real waster. But anyway, here I was at the university, studying, sort of, and Prabhupada came. And in those days, amongst the young people, the youth, they were really like a, like a society, an independent society, independent of just the regular society. They really were. It was really quite amazing, actually. Can you hear the music? So, yeah, the youth in those days, they were a very distinct group. And they were very, like, anti, very anti the establishment, really anti. So I was in that mood. There was a slogan, don't trust anyone over 30. Yeah, don't trust anyone over 30. Are any of you over 30? Are you over 30? Shalalata? Slightly. No, she's not. Are you over 30? 30 in 6 months. Are you over 30? A little bit. So there's the slogan, don't trust anyone over 30. And it was really like that. It was really like that. Gee whiz. All these old people over 30, they were taken to be real, just hopeless, cop-outs, unprincipled, useless people, doing nothing of value with their lives, just working to make money. And there was one famous song, Little Boxers. Did you ever hear of that? Peter, Paul and Mary, they're folk singers. We all live in little boxes made of ticky-tacky. And I forget the words, but that was the idea. Everyone is just like little machines. And they all look the same. So, but then, when I saw Srila Prabhupada, there was no idea, like, he's over 30. Who needs him? The Prabhupada was not just over 30. He was over 70. He was like 75 years old. I think he was actually 75. So, but there was no feeling like, oh, he's an old person. He's one of these. Is he screaming in agony? He sat on the drawing pin. At school we would do that. Put drawing pins sometimes on the teacher's chair. Yeah. So, but with Prabhupada, you know, as soon as I saw him, there was just, and for all the young people, there was no feeling like, oh, he's an old person, and it's just some old establishment thing, and it's nothing cool, or, you know, of value, nothing which is really going to enrich you in any way. And it was very interesting. Srila Prabhupada was preaching, and at least quite a few of the points that Prabhupada was emphasizing were points which were already accepted. They were like just standard understandings of the hippies. Oh yeah. It wasn't like, you know, we are just people, Westerners, and now here's someone from India with these very different ideas and philosophies. Many of the things that Prabhupada was presenting, many of them were just standard parts of the youth culture in those days. You know, just like materialism, of course. Prabhupada was preaching against just working hard, earning money, and just living comfortably in a big Lani house in what? Mobini? No. Maybe. What's it called? Westville. So Prabhupada was preaching strongly against that. Really strongly. And Prabhupada was emphasizing that this whole materialistic way of life, of this working and accumulating things and all that, that you are, by being absorbed in that, you are missing the point of life, the goal of life. You're missing that. And the young people in those days, they also felt like that. They really felt like that. And the idea was, there was a slogan. I said partly, not completely, we agree. I mean, Prabhupada agreed. There's a slogan, turn on, tune in, drop out. We will not get into the turn on part of it, because that is a real nonsense. But tune in, become conscious, become aware of what is reality in life, and then drop out of the ordinary materialistic way of life. You know, unfortunately, even though many people did that, young people, millions of young people did that. But when they dropped out, they had no alternative to drop into. Yeah. There was no alternative, positive alternative. Like, I don't think it's current nowadays, but back in maybe 10 or maybe 15 years or something, there was a movement amongst the young people, mainly in America, but also in parts of Europe and maybe here, I don't know about that. It was part of the punk culture. It was called Straight Edge. Did you ever hear of Straight Edge? Straight Edge. And straight edge meant that you go straight. You don't take any intoxicants. You don't eat meat. And, you know, stuff like that. You're straight. You're really straight. And that you say no. Big part of it was you say no to all these things, like even illicit sex life. And one of their ideas was that if you're going to have a relationship with a member of the opposite sex, it should be a committed relationship, not just a casual relationship. You know, would you believe? You might not believe, but it's true. This is almost a confession. I am on Facebook. Hare Krishna. Excuse me. And I open up, you know, Facebook usually every day at some point. And I have about 4,000, a little over 4,000 friends. Some of them are friends. Some of them definitely really are friends, but many are just sort of, you know what I mean. So occasionally we get these things just popping up on Facebook from devotees that we know, that we even know very well. And some of them, gee whiz, about my boyfriend this and my girlfriend that, and you know, I think you're a dot dot dot. I'm not joking. Some of you may be sitting here right now. So straight edge was, you don't do things like that. You don't do things like that at all. But you're really straight. And you say no. So many of them, they had tattooed on the back of their hand a big X. A big X. I say no. Yeah. But the problem, so it was quite a big phenomenon, actually. We're talking about maybe 15 years ago, something like that. I don't know if it's still going on. And the devotees, they were devotee musicians, punk musicians, who were leading the whole movement, like, gee whiz, 108, that group. And what was the other one? Youth of Today. And this is all old stuff for people like you. But the problem with that was, you can reject so many things, but then you have to accept something. You can't just be like a zero, and your life can't be like zero. Just know this, know that. There's one song which was a favorite of Srila Prabhupada's. I think it's Bhaja Hare Mana. You know that song? Bhaja Hare Mana Sri Nanda Nandana Abhay Charana Charanara Vindale. So in that song, this Govinda does, he's saying, Sita Atapa Vata Varishana. And so many things we reject. Attachment to family members, attachment to money, attachment to sense gratification. So Prabhupada, he recorded a translation and commentary to that song. It's mainly none of this, none of that, none of something else, none of so many things. And Prabhupada is reading the translating it. And then, because in that song, Govinda Das is speaking to his mind. Bhaja Hare Mana. Mana means the mind. Oh my dear mind, don't be like this, don't be like that, don't be like many things. And then Prabhupada says that after a little while, Govinda Das's mind turns around and says, okay, so I can't do all these things, and I understand why, and it makes sense why, but what can I do? I have to do something. What can I do? And then, Bhaja Hare Mana Sri Nanda Nandana Abhay Charanara Vindale. Just worship the lotus feet of Sri Nandanandan Krishna, who's the beloved son of Nanda Maharaj. And Abhay Charanara Vindare, if we take shelter of his lotus feet, we become fearless within this material world. So this theme from time to time comes up, because amongst the youth, and even beyond just the youth, but it's perhaps more particularly amongst the youth, that the youth, or some of the youth, realize, hey, what are we doing? What's going on here? What are we supporting when we, you know, become part of the scene, the establishment? When we become part of that, what are we supporting? We are supporting something really wrong, in many ways really wrong and really destructive. And for devotees at least, say, something really against Krishna consciousness. It's like Prabhupada would say sometimes, trying to light a fire with one hand while pouring water on it with the other hand. That's not a very good idea, is it? Yeah. So from time to time in the youth culture, there are groups of people who get these realizations. So in my day, you know, this was like the mid-60s. We're talking about almost 50 years ago. That's practically prehistoric, isn't it? That's the Middle Ages, the Dark Ages, in the forgotten past. So in those days, there was this hippie movement, which was very big, extremely big, like I said, many, many millions of people, young people, really like drastically changing their ways of life. And then, you know, like what, in the 70s, I suppose, was the punk movement started. It was also big. Not as big as the hippie movement, but it was big. And it was also very anti. God Save the Queen. Right? You familiar with that song? God Save the Queen. Johnny Rotten. Yes. And then later, now I'm sure, you know, from time to time there have been other things. But then later, at the time I'm mentioning now, there was the straight edge movement. I think it was the very late 80s and the early 90s, the straight edge movement. And it was also, well, it was kind of punk oriented, very heavy, aggressive music. And I knew these devotees. I knew these devotees from 108 and Shelter, that's right, Raghunath and company. I knew them quite well, and I'd never heard their music. And I said, oh, can I hear some of your music? Do you have any video? And they said, you don't want to listen to our music. They told me, it's not really music, it's just noise. They told me themselves. And I went, you've heard of Sridhar Maharaj, who passed away, whatever, 10 years ago, something like that. Sridhar Maharaj, I knew him very well, such a wonderful devotee. He and I were there in New York. It was probably like the mid-90s, 95, 96, something like that. And we had New York Rath Yatra. And then that night, the same night of New York Rath Yatra, 108, and they were like the heavy, heavy straight-edge devotees. They were having a concert in somewhere in Manhattan. And they invited Sridhar Maharaj and I, and me, to come to the concert. So we went. And we walked into this concert hall. It was sort of like a dungeon somewhere in Manhattan. It was just Tamagun embodied. It was amazing. And at the door, these huge bouncers, and they searched me and... Oh, really? Oh, I had the rest of the... I thought I had the rest of the day. So they had these huge bouncers. They're like the size of all of our older men put together. 6 foot 6 at least. And all muscle, including their heads. So they searched us. They searched us. And then we sat down. And the young people in the audience, they were really nice. They were really nice. They were buying us lemonades, and they gave us the best seat, and they were checking, are we okay, like every 10 minutes. And they're all these straight-edged young people with short hair. And they looked like they just came straight out of the office. Something like that. But, so, and then this group, 108, Raj Kishore was the leader. He started singing. And I tell you, probably 20% of the song, of each song, was swear words. Oh yeah. They were just swearing up and down and left and right and, I mean, really cursing and cursing against material life, materialistic people, hypocrites. Wow. Just giving everybody the sauce, as they say in Chatsworth, one way. So, but the thing is, so, and the young people, they were there. You know, they're going, yeah, right, right on. And 108, sometimes they would climb on top of the audience and go walking around on the heads of the audience. It was amazing. While swearing and screaming. That, you know, basically saying material life is just, you know, only worthy of being rejected. But what happens? What happens though is that if people like that, you know, they may be quite right. It may be clear in their minds what is wrong with the materialistic way of life. But then to find the alternative, that's another thing. So, one thing I saw many years ago, was like when I first came here, it was in the early 80s, maybe 30 years ago, I saw a magazine, and there was an article in it about one of the leaders of the hippie movement. He was extremely famous, like violent. He was like a violent revolutionary amongst the hippies. His name was Jerry Rubin. And this article, it was like a then and now article. Then, he was this radical, heavy, literally blow up the government buildings, revolutionary. And now, at that time, 30 years ago, he was a stockbroker on Wall Street. You know what that means. Big money man. Wheeling and dealing. Oh, yes. And I saw that and I thought, my God, just see. If you don't have a positive alternative, even though it may be clear what is wrong with material life, but if you haven't got a positive alternative, then you just get sort of drawn back into it. And you make a few nice excuses so you think it's okay. But it's hypocrisy, really. So, Prabhupada, the thing with Prabhupada was, he was offering A or the positive alternative. It's a fact. Material life is a waste of time, and it's just, it's pathetic, actually. It's just too much. It's crazy. But Krishna consciousness is a real alternative. So, when I saw Prabhupada that day, April 1972, then, and he started speaking, and I was listening, and I thought, hey, that's what I think. Like, what's wrong? What's wrong with material life? That's what I think. That's what all my friends think. Hey, wow, this is cool. And then there were other things which, you know, couldn't really relate to, at least at that point. But Prabhupada, he transcended. He transcended the youth movement. He transcended all these different attitudes. He transcended everything. And that was one of the first points that really struck me in terms of appreciating Srila Prabhupada. You may have heard, I've told this story on many occasions, and others may have also, because it's a bit of a classic. Srila Prabhupada, 1966-67, he was preaching in Manhattan, New York, Lower East Side. It was the center of the hippie society in New York. So he had his place there, and he was preaching there in the evenings, and all sorts of people would come. You get all types of people, including the most prominent from the youth culture. Like the Grateful Dead and Jefferson Airplane. You probably never heard of these people. But they were, in America, the leaders of the youth culture. And some of them would come and hear Srila Prabhupada. So there was one group who you've never heard of, and I hope you never listen to their music because it's really degraded. They were called the Thugs, F-U-G-S, the Thugs. And they were, like I said, they were really degraded. Just elicit everything, absolutely. If it feels good, do it. So anyway, one of the, or even a couple of the members of the Thugs came and attended one of Srila Prabhupada's programs in his center there, 26 Second Avenue, Lower East Side, Manhattan, New York. So there they are, and somehow or other, Srila Prabhupada, somehow or other, he chose to speak a little bit about how taking drugs was not good. You shouldn't take drugs. It won't help you. It'll mess you up. And, you know, like this, Prabhupada was speaking. Then, in the middle of all this, this young man from the Thugs sort of interrupted Prabhupada quite loudly and said, Hey, you're speaking against LSD. Was the most popular drug in those days. You're speaking against it. You're saying it's bad. You're saying it's no good. But do you know what it's like? Have you ever tried it? Have you ever taken it? And Srila Prabhupada said, no, I've never taken it. And that young man said, well, what right do you have to speak against it? You don't even know what it is. You don't know what it's like. So, you know, expressed himself quite strongly like that. And there was a whole group of them, like his friends and hangers-on, because he was a big man. And they were all agreeing with him. Yeah, you're right. Hey, you got him. Good one. He never tried it. What can he say about it? And then Prabhupada responded. It was a classic Prabhupada response. Prabhupada said, no, I have never tried it. But you do not need to eat stool to know that it tastes bad. And that poor young man, he was just silenced, totally on the spot. What could you say to a response like that? So, yeah. So Prabhupada understood. They had no alternative. And in fact, that whole movement had just collapsed over a period of maybe 5 or 6 years. It just dwindled and just degraded and collapsed. As did the punk movement, as did the straight edge movement, as will the next one, whatever it's going to be, of, you know, down with the establishment and all that. It's all going to go down because they don't have an alternative. But Prabhupada, he presented an alternative, a real alternative. And for anyone, who tries it nicely, then they'll also experience themselves that, yeah, this is a real alternative. It's really nice. It's really blissful and happy. I get out of all the nonsense which they complain about, all these outspoken social critics and people like that. You get out of all that nonsense, but then you get something positive. So this is Srila Prabhupada. And he was so clever. You know, he could relate with the hippies. And the hippies, you know, most of them were drugged. A lot of them were permanently drugged. If you were ever not dragged, you were considered uncool. You were just, you know, a conservative if you were undragged. So they were kind of bizarre people at best. And there's Srila Prabhupada from what you could say was an extremely ultra-conservative background. Ultra-conservative, even by Indian standards. No onions, no garlic. That's ultra-conservative. But Srila Prabhupada came into New York. He could immediately relate with these young people. Just immediately connect with them and help them to tune into Krishna consciousness, and then help them to realize, hey, this is really good. Let's get into this. Are we over time? Oh, 5 minutes. 5 minutes of Lord Brahma. So it's nice. That was one of my first realizations with Srila Prabhupada, that even though he was really old, he was really old when I met him, but still, here's a person I could relate to. I could really relate to. We were just on the same wavelength, completely. Yeah. Then, the next time, so I saw Srila Prabhupada there, April 72. Next time I saw Prabhupada was in maybe June or so of 73. And I'd gone to England and I joined the temple there. I joined the temple there in London. And then that was January 73. January the 7th. 1973, I moved into the temple. In a few weeks, it'll be 40 years 40th anniversary. And maybe June or so, something like that, Srila Prabhupada came, because George Harrison had given this big place. It was our biggest place practically, I think, in the world at that time. And it was a very special situation. So Prabhupada came and stayed for some time. And I mentioned a story the other day when we were at the youth mail. I'll just repeat it here. I know some of you were there, but I hope you don't mind. Prabhupada arrived by helicopter. There was this one devotee in charge of making the arrangements for picking Prabhupada up from the airport, Heathrow Airport, which was some distance away. And you know what he did? This devotee, he was really, woo, a real character. Just in order to make sure that Prabhupada got picked up, and you know, there was no mistake, and he didn't get picked up or something, they were late. You know what he did? He organized 3 limousines from 3 different companies, plus a helicopter. And these guys in these limousines, you know, these smart guys and the huge, big cars, they rolled up at Bhaktivedanta Manor, and this is earlier, and they realized, hey, there's 3 of us. There's only 1 person coming, but there's 3 of us. What's going on? So they asked one devotee. He was the temple commander. Temple commander. He's sort of almost like the vice president. He asked them, what's going on here? Who knows what's going on? Who's in charge here? And you know what he answered? Good answer. Krishna's in control. And off he went. And there are these guys. Where do we find Krishna then? So, oh, Hare Krishna. Then they brought Prabhupada in by helicopter from Heathrow into the grounds of Bhaktivedanta Manor, and Prabhupada got out. And there were all these devotees from all over Europe there, some hundreds. And they lined up from the helicopter into the Bhaktivedanta Manor in 2 lines. And Prabhupada walked in between the 2 lines and eventually came inside. And I was there right at the end because I was one of the new boys. I was 21. When I met Prabhupada, I was 20. I was 20 once. So, but now I was 21. So I was at the end of the line inside Bhaktivedanta Manor, and Prabhupada came in and he stopped right in front of me. Almost right in front of me. And we offered our obeisances and Prabhupada stopped. So we're down now, and there's Prabhupada's feet, and what do we do? Should we stand up? And we thought, better play it safe, stay down. So we stayed down, offering obeisances. And this one devotee next to me, we're down, and he looked at me, and I looked at him, because our heads are down. I looked at him and he looked at me. And he stuck his... And he pointed like this at Prabhupada's feet. And he stuck his hand out. And out. And out. And he had to stretch a bit, because Prabhupada's maybe a meter away or something. And he stuck his hand out. Touched Prabhupada's foot. And then he turned to me and said, go on. And Prabhupada was a little further away from me. He's kind of in front of that devotee, so he's a little on a diagonal from me. So this devotee's saying, go on. So I stuck my hand out, but I thought, no, Prabhupada's too far away. So I pulled my hand back and he went, go on. So I stuck my hand up And there was this one sannyasi there, Brahmananda Swami, with his big, he was a big man, with his big danda. And he banged his danda on my hand a few times. But this other devotee was saying, "Go on, go on." So I just stuck my hand out and out and out and out and touched Srila Prabhupada's lotus foot. And as a result, I think I'm still here in Prabhupada's movement by his mercy. So Prabhupada's very merciful. And Prabhupada really appreciated the young people. He really appreciated, particularly the young Americans. He really appreciated them so much because they helped him spread Krishna consciousness in a massive way. So, okay, you youth and you other youth at the back there. Yeah, that's you. You can, Prabhupada is there and Prabhupada is waiting for you. Prabhupada is open to you. And if you make some effort, even a small effort, but you know, as much as you can to help spread Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada appreciates so much. He appreciated the energy, the vitality, the sort of optimism of the young people. So all of you young people, please try and do like that and take up some mission, take up some project for presenting Krishna consciousness to the other young people. And Prabhupada will be so happy. He'll appreciate you. He'll give you his mercy. And then your life will just develop so dynamically and wonderfully. So, there you go. Some thoughts about appreciating Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki! Hare Krishna.